everybody, and welcome back to Conversations with Chrissy. I'm really excited about today's conversation. We talk a lot about highway safety, our goal of Vision Zero in Maryland, and today we have with us an advocate from Mothers Against Drunk Driving, Vicki Brown, who unfortunately has had to live through a true tragedy that none of us can imagine unless we're standing in her shoes. But she has taken that tragedy and brought such good into the world and into Maryland as a result of it. So I'm honored to have you as a guest on our podcast
thank
today.
Thank you Vicki. So much, Chrissy. I'm honored to be here. I truly am.
Well, thank you. I know that your mission, since unfortunately you lost your son, is to end impaired driving so other families don't have to suffer how you have. And I always try to make the point, it doesn't matter how long ago it happened, right? It's still so fresh for you. That's your child. That's your baby.
Yes.
So I wonder if you could just start and share your story. I think that's so powerful to hear, no matter how many times we hear it.
Yes. You know, I would probably say I'd never get tired of telling the story because it's my way of honoring my son. Mm. Because he no longer has a voice. So every time I share his story, I'm honoring him. Mm-hmm. And every time I share his story, someone knows his name. Mm-hmm. And that's one of my drives, or that's my biggest drive in man. So what happened with my family and I? Last year, I think, was the first time that I realized that I am a survivor as well. Mm-hmm. Because my family and I were all in the car.
That's right.
We were coming home from the movies. Something as simple as a family outing. Mm-hmm. Coming home from the movies when a drunk driver hit us doing approximately 125 miles per hour, splitting our car in half. According to the witnesses, we did a couple of 360s. Mm. We spun over a couple of times and landed in this upright position. When I came to because I was being awakened by a fireman. Mm. And I didn't know it was a fireman. It was just like a figment, you know, like I could see his face, but the outline of him. But I thought I was dreaming.
Wow.
And I kept thinking, wow, this is a very vivid dream. I hear this person screaming. I can feel them touching me. Mm. It's a crazy dream. And I literally had to shake myself and tell myself, Vicki, wake up, because I thought it was a dream. Mm. And when I shook myself, I instantly said, ow, because I felt pain first, but then I felt heaviness. And the heaviness was because my son was resting completely over my shoulders. And when I saw Darius's face, everything became real. Mm-hmm. I could see all the red lights. I could hear all the sirens. I could hear them cutting us out of the car. Everything became real because seeing his face, I could see that he was hurt. Mm-hmm. I don't remember how I got out of the car, but I did. Mm-hmm. I remember running up and down the median. And I remember my husband with someone trying to get my attention, trying to stop me. And I'm like, it was so many people there that I can remember. And I was just grabbing at these people, just saying, somebody please help my son, help my son. He's hurt badly. And then I was like, oh, my God, where's my baby? Where's Aaliyah? And my husband said something that I thought made him really hurt, you know. He said, oh, she's with the doctors and the nurses. And that didn't make sense to me. And when I looked to my right, my daughter was lying in the grass, and she had on all white that day. And she was completely covered in blood all from her neck all the way down to the end of her skirt. Mm-hmm. And there were people around her. And I said, Ryan, because my son's best friend, who I called my other son, was also in the car. And he was sitting there, and he was just, like, gazing into the night. But he was, like, right beside Aaliyah. And then my husband was like, the medevac, the medevac, the medevac's here. And I went into this panic mode again because I knew what that meant. Mm-hmm. And apparently all of the people that were there were there were doctors and nurses there and nurses assistants because there was a shift change at Johns Hopkins and Johns Hopkins Bayview. So they witnessed the crash and they stopped to help.
I see.
So at first I thought my husband was a little cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, but he actually knew what he was talking about. The medevac was super quick, and I got on an ambulance. My husband got on one. My daughter was on one. Ryan was on one. We thought Darius was on the medevac. And I was like, when we got to the hospital, I just thought they put us all in different rooms. That's what I thought.
Your understanding, right?
And I was kind of wrapped up like a mummy because while I was running up and down the median, what I thought was sweat was actually blood because I had gone through the windshield. Mm. And so they had me like completely strapped down. And two people come into my room, one dressed in plain clothing, one in nurse's gear. And the one in nurse's gear is holding this really big needle. And the one in plain clothing says, "Miss Brown, where's Mr. Brown?" And I said, "Oh, he went to be with Darius because he was hurt really badly." And she goes, "Well, Darius died and we need to give you something."
Oh my gosh.
Just like that.
Wow.
And of course, I lose it. I'm like pulling.
Yeah.
I'm like real mama bear, lion, tiger, elephant, everything you can think of. And she was like, and she was trying to, the nurse was trying to take this needle and do something with it. And I was like, no, I have to call my husband. And she's like, "Well, Miss Brown, if you calm down, we'll let you call your husband." And I said, "Okay." And I called my husband because I didn't want him to go there and find our only son, our firstborn, Aaliyah's big brother, her only sibling, and what she will still to this day say her very best friend, like that. I didn't want him to walk into that. And he screamed. And there is this faint scream sound in this ear that I hear constantly. And I could not wrap my head around what had happened because we were literally just talking about where to go and get milk.
And in that split second,
it was over. I mean, I remember we also talked about what a beautiful night it was because it was like every star that God has ever created was out. And we was like, "Oh my God, it's so beautiful." But it was just those little simple things that we were talking about. And that split second, this guy changed our lives for the rest of our lives. Every day feels different. And some days feel like yesterday. But every day feels like it just happened. Every second feels like it just happened. So,
and I'm sure the holidays and other major events, his birthday.
It took years for me to get comfortable with holidays. I no longer wanted to go to like the family holidays or any kind of get-togethers for the holidays because everyone's there with their family.
Right.
You know, they're with their children and husbands and wives and, you know, their family is whole. But our family is broken. So it was hard for me for years to see families. And I know these families and see them whole. And we were broken. Like, I mean, something as simple, Chrissy, as sitting at your dining room table to eat dinner. We have four chairs. I could no longer sit at my table.
Oh, wow.
Because There's
an empty chair.
There's an empty chair.
That's right.
How do you? I couldn't do that. I couldn't live in my house. I didn't know how to be Aaliyah's, fully be Aaliyah's mm-hmm. mom. Because I was blessed with two kids.
Right.
So how do you wrap your head around that? Mm-hmm. Holidays, horrible. His birthday, on the other hand, is the easiest thing I do mm-hmm. because he loved celebrating birthdays. Aww. He was 12.
Uh-huh.
So he had already planted the seed in me and his best friends what he wanted to do for his 13th birthday.
Mm.
So I got together with the boys, and on his 13th birthday, we did exactly what he wanted to do.
That's awesome.
And every year thereafter, I've always celebrated his birthday.
That's great.
I don't know why the birthday is the easiest thing for me to do, but it is the easiest. That's the one thing that I can do, and I actually find peace in doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Is celebrate
some normalcy birthday. Because that's what he wanted, right? He loved his birthday.
Yeah. He loved his birthday. He loved everybody's birthday. Aww. I love celebrating people so much mm-hmm. because I got that from him.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it was his friend's birthday or anybody's birthday, we're celebrating because it's your birthday. He was always so excited about it. So that's the one thing I can do that is easy to do. The anniversary date in our house, it was May 30th, 2004. May 30th, 2004 was Memorial Day weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So in our house, we call Memorial Day the bad day.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bad mm-hmm. day. And for years, we would fly out of the country because we didn't want to be here. Because for some reason in our minds, if we're not here in the United States,
mm-hmm.
then it we don't have to deal with it because we're somewhere else.
Right.
Although that date came there as mm-hmm. well. And eventually we realized that date still happens. Mm-hmm. It doesn't disappear because we thought we were disappearing from it. It's normalcy has... That's a real tricky word mm-hmm. for me.
Mm-hmm.
It really is.
Because it's a new reality now. It's not normal, right? This should not happen to any family. No mother should
never
have to live through that.
No mother. No mother. And it pains me that there are always someone coming behind me.
Mm.
Always. When I started therapy, the first therapy session I did was a group session
mm-hmm.
and I couldn't do it
mm.
because I couldn't sit in there with these mothers who had lost their child and I'm sitting there going, there's so many of us mm. this has happened to so many of us, because when it happened I felt like it was just me.
Of course.
No, this did not happen to anybody else. Right. This is just me. And I sat in there with a group and I could not. I had the worst panic attack because just to think that there are so many people coming behind me
mm-hmm.
and there were so many people and there's so many people before me.
Right.
And it doesn't have to be.
Mm-hmm.
So can't do group sessions. Individuals, I can do that.
Well, I'm just always awed at your ability to tell the story as well as other who've suffered through mm-hmm. these kind of tragedies. And I truly believe that telling the story makes a difference, because I don't know how anybody can listen mm-hmm. to what happened to your family and still get impaired and get behind the wheel. It's just unacceptable, obviously.
Unacceptable. Great word.
I really am truly inspired by the fact that you took that pain that you just described, not even being able to hear, you know, somebody else talk about what they went through. And yet here you are now, an advocate for MAD. Talk a little bit about that journey. You know, what was the thing inside of you that said, I'm going to take this horrible situation and turn it into something positive?
So I had heard of MAD, but wasn't very familiar with it, because it never really affected me or anyone in my circle. So I hadn't heard, I heard of it, but I really was not that involved. I knew what it was. And Mad contacted me. And it was so funny because when they contacted me, they were mad. And the passion that they had, I was not there. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I can't talk to those people. Right. I was like, they're mad, you know. And I was like, I can't do it. I can't do it. And then Jan reached out to me and Nancy. And I met with them, just the two of them. And they gave me comfort that I had an outlet. Mm-hmm. There was an outlet. And they just invited me to watch them do things. That's what I did. And I shared with Lisa that my experience that I had with law enforcement, mm-hmm. which was beautiful. When I tell you they held my and my husband's hands through this process, we had a beautiful experience. And because of them and the conversation that I had with Jan and Nancy, I said, okay, I'll do it. And I literally started out going to the academy and just speaking to newly graduated cadets. Mm-hmm. And it was because I was just sharing my experience mm-hmm. with law enforcement. And it was therapeutic. Mm-hmm. But every time I got into the car afterwards, I would have a horrible panic attack. Mm. So I would have to call my husband or call one of my friends, and, you know, somebody would have to talk me down and calm me down and talk me to drive all the way home. Mm-hmm. But I threw myself into that. Mm. But I don't necessarily know if I was throwing myself into it because I was honoring my son mm-hmm. or I was fighting the cause. It was just therapeutic for me to tell his story. Mm-hmm. And I wanted everybody mm-hmm. to know. I wanted everybody that would listen to mm-hmm. know my story. Yeah. Everyone. And then after a while, I had to back away from it because I had thrown myself into speaking so much. I would go here. I would 2 and 3 times a week.
Okay.
No problem. Yeah. I'll go. I'll do it. And then my therapist was like, you're going to have to take a breather because this isn't benefiting you. Mm-hmm. And I stepped away, and Lisa and Donna reached out to me, and they talked to me about the Victims Impact Panel. Mm-hmm. And Donna was like, I want you to come and, you know, hear what I do. And when I saw what she did, I was like, I could do that.
Yeah.
It's only once a month, uh-huh. you know. And then they were like, well, can you do 2 locations? And I was like, okay, it's only twice a month, you know. So that's how I first got involved with MAD. And the Victim Impact Panel is really what was the driving force behind me realizing I wanted to do more. Because it was blowing my mind every month how many people were taking this class. And I'm thinking, I am on the road with these people.
Yeah.
And that was the reality of it for me. It's like, this has to stop. Mm-hmm. And what can I do? What can Vicky do to help stop this senseless act?
So just for our listeners, that Victim Impact Panel is for those who have offended, right?
Yes.
Those who have committed the very act mm-hmm. that caused your yes. sweet son to lose his life. So you're literally talking to someone who's out there, as you said, on the road with you doing these things. Talk a little bit about that. It has to be just incredibly challenging.
So what the impact the Victims Impact Panel has on me is I'm actually talking to these offenders, and I'm telling them, hey, your actions someone did the exact same thing that you were doing, but look at my life. Mm-hmm. My life is what my therapist taught me is a new normal. Mm-hmm. I have to learn how to do the same things, but differently. Mm-hmm. In order to function,
right?
Because otherwise I can't function. So sitting, talking to these, the people at the Victims Impact Panel, it's very challenging because some of them you see their faces and they're angry. Like,
why am I here?
But we get that. Yeah. We get, oh, I didn't do anything. I shouldn't have gotten arrested. I really wasn't doing anything. All I did was swerved. I was sleepy, da, 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 da. We get all of that. Mm-hmm. And we actually get people who will challenge us. And while we're speaking, and I've heard people say, oh, I really don't want to hear that. I don't want to be here. If it's so hard for you, why are you doing it? And I mean, some people can be like very rude and very indignant. Mm-hmm. And the way I handle it is I just tell them, well, we don't want to be here.
Right.
We're not here by choice. You're here because of your actions. Mm-hmm. You caused yourself to have to sit in here and listen to us share to you the stories about us losing our loved ones because of the very action that you did.
That's right.
I'm not going to apologize for sharing my story. If you don't want to listen, you're more than welcome to leave. And you can come back next month and listen to me. Mm-hmm. Again, so we can try it again next month. So it can be very, I think I get very offended. No, actually, I know I get very offended when they start to challenge us about what they did and they don't want to. We're not going to do that because you're not going to make us feel like we're doing something wrong.
Right.
Because we're not doing anything wrong. But at the end of the night, there is always one person that will come up to you and say, can I hug you? Mm. Or thank you so much for sharing your story. I felt that. I feel like I know your son. Mm. I'll never forget Darius's name. And our motto just became, well, my motto, and then it became our group's motto. If one person gets it, we did our job. So I can sit in front of 100 people, and if 99 of them walk out and never say anything, but one person comes up to us, then I did my job. I've honored my son, and now one person, because that one person will tell another person, and that person will tell another person, and now we have this domino effect. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many times I'm just walking in the store, and somebody comes up to me and say, Darius's mom. Uh-huh. And I'm like, yes.
You have to love that.
Yeah. They might not remember my name, but they'll say, Darius's mom. And I've had people find me on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I've had people donate for the walk. We do a walk, walk like mad every year. They donate in honor of Darius. Wow. And I'm like, who is this person?
Yeah.
Because they found our walk. And they donated. Mm-hmm. So I know that we're making a difference. And even if it's one person a month, we've made a difference. So those people, that person has become my driving force. Like, I know I can do this. Mm-hmm. I know I want to do more because one person got it. Mm-hmm. So if that one person got it and I go here and I speak there or I share my story here, then one person gets it. We have this domino effect going.
And it's such a big issue because of repeat offenders. We know people are out there driving impaired multiple times, oftentimes before they are caught or do something horrific.
Yes.
So that truly is impactful if you think about
it. Really
changing behavior of one person and then their family and friends and others in their circle.
Yes.
Really drives us down to that zero fatalities, hopefully.
If I see those repeat offenders, because I have this photogenic memory, and I never forget a face, and sometimes I won't even forget your name, and they'll walk in and I'll say to them in front of the whole class, oh, you were here last year and you're back again. I told you I never wanted to see you again.
Yeah.
Because when I finish my classes, I tell them, I never want to see any of you again, ever. Because that means you are making smart decisions now. So when you come back, you have to face me.
Mm. Well, incredibly impactful. I know you also speak to students, right? Young yes. people. And I think yeah. that's important, too, to stop anything terrible from happening.
Yes.
You know, that new driver or getting ready to start driving. And talk about that a little bit.
So when I got involved with speaking to students, the first place that Lisa had me go to was a juvenile center. And it was probably only about 11 kids in the class. And those kids had so many questions.
Mm.
And the questions that they were asking me were things that I thought they knew.
Okay.
Because they were of that age.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I thought, how did they not know this? I'm like, wow. So when we started going into the schools, and it started out with prom promise.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids would be in there. Some of them would be on their cell phones and they're laughing and talking. And I am the person that will be like, I'm speaking and that's kind of rude. Mm-hmm. Can you please put your phones away? But then when they start listening, and then when we say, does anyone have any questions? Again, I was so surprised at some of the questions. Because some of the things that these kids didn't know, they weren't aware of. And I've had kids come up to me and say, no, my parents never talked to me about that. Or, you know, my parents drink and, you know, they always are drinking. And da, 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 da. My father has friends that come over, whatever. And that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
That's all fine and well. But I realize some kids aren't being educated on the dangers of being using alcohol or any kind of drugs.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't aware of that. Oh, because they are teenagers, so they're invincible.
Of course.
And this would never happen to me.
Right.
But it happened to someone I know, but not me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that was hard to do at first when we went into the schools, the high schools, because talking to these juniors and these seniors, all I kept thinking is, my son never made it here.
Yeah.
And I got to a point where I would share that with them.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, you guys are seniors. You're getting ready to graduate from high school. You're getting ready to go to the prom. My son never got to experience any of this.
Mm-hmm.
So knowing that there are some things that kids just don't know, that's my driving force
mm-hmm.
for speaking to the kids. And I just absolutely love it when they have questions
mm-hmm.
because that means they got something
mm-hmm.
and they want more.
Mm-hmm.
So they want you to feed them. So, okay, we'll feed you. So, yeah, that's a great, great program that we have. And I wish we could go into every high school because there are so many areas where kids need to hear the consequences
mm-hmm.
because so many of them think that there is no consequence, or some of them think this will never happen to me, so I'm
right.
not going to have a consequence. So,
and I think it's an important reminder, and I say this all the time to adults, kids are always watching.
Mm-hmm.
From a young age.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I know that going into schools myself and talking
yes.
about safety issues.
Oh, yeah.
They're observing you all the time. And if you're doing it, they think that means it's acceptable.
Right.
Do you want your child to be doing what you're doing behind
right.
the wheel? And that's how you really need to think about it.
Yes, because, you know, I'm glad you said that, because with MAD, with the research that we've been doing, we find that kids as young as the age of 9 are basically, like, entertaining alcohol.
Mm.
And some
so
by the age of 12 are already smoking mm-hmm. marijuana or using some kind of cannabis by the age of 12.
Mm-hmm.
And we found that if we don't capture these kids while they're young, then this is just going to become their pattern.
Right.
So by the time they're 21, drinking is, or being impaired, is just the norm for them.
Mm-hmm. It's what they know.
It's what they know. And you are absolutely correct about what they see. One of our studies also said that kids who don't sit and have dinner with their parents, or if they don't interact mm-hmm. within their family or some type of family environment, those are the kids that are more likely that's going to start drinking or start using some kind of drug of their choice at a very early age, because they're basically, in a sense, a loner. So they're doing what I always said, idle minds will find trouble.
Right.
So they're finding it, and they're finding their comfort in, oh, I'll just have a drink, or, oh, I'll just, you know, use this cannabis, or I'll just, you know, have this marijuana. They find that that's their comfort, and at an early age.
Right.
So family environment is very important. But one of the best tools for our kids is parents just sitting down, having a conversation with them, and telling them they have consequences, or the consequences of you doing these things.
Right.
That's the best. The parents are the best tool.
Mm-hmm.
Our kids have the best tool ever.
Yeah.
And some parents just aren't. Another study showed some parents said maybe once a year, two, maybe three times a year, they'll talk about it. And some parents, I think it was like 12% of the parents, said they've never talked to their kids about it and never talked to them about the consequences. 12%?
Mm.
Never? That was wild to me. It was like, whoa. It
really is. Well, hopefully parents listening to your story today decide to have those. And I know they can be tough conversations, but they are so necessary. So necessary.
They are. It's the reality of it for my life is a conversation I never had to have with my daughter.
Right. She lived it, right?
She lived it. I've never had to have that conversation with her about it, because she would be the one that would have the conversation with her friends. Because, you know, in MAD, we also tell kids, don't get in a vehicle with your friend.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay to take your friend's keys.
Right.
Or it's okay to tell an adult, hey, he or she is this or that, and they're trying to drive.
Mm-hmm.
Because not only are you saving your friend's life, but you're saving someone else's.
That's right.
So having a child that is living this has made her probably, she is the most responsible young lady I know.
Sure. No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt. Sorry, this had to bring it to that. But one other group that I know you've been very active taking advocacy to is to legislators in Annapolis. And I wonder if you can talk about that experience. I know Noah's Law has been in the news a lot.
Yes.
Another inspiring story that has brought change. But you have been there.
Yes. Yes.
Constant.
Yes.
With your story.
Yes.
And the pictures of your son. And,
yes.
And talk a little bit about that. And I'm sure it's different than those other kind of advocacy work that you do.
So for me, when I know that there's a bill that we're trying to pass, for me, it's really simple. This bill will save lives. And if we can save lives, I'm there.
Mm-hmm.
Count me in, because I want to be in the forefront of what do you need me to do?
Mm-hmm.
Because I need you all to hear us.
Right.
So when I got involved with helping to push this bill through with Noah's Law, I made a promise to Noah, and I made a promise to Darius.
Mm.
I will do any and everything, because this is a great bill. Mm-hmm. And it is going to save lives. We have to do better.
That's right.
We have to do better. So that experience was nerve-wracking.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're living it. And so for us, it's something very so simplistic. Mm-hmm. This is going to save lives. And for the politicians, the politics of it all, it's not that simple.
Right.
And my hope was, and still is, let's take the politics out of it and think about the humanity of it.
Mm-hmm.
And if we put the humanity in the forefront instead of the politics of it, oh my God, we are going to save so many lives.
That's right.
And it's going to be a beautiful thing. Our highways are going to be safe. I'm not going to be nervous when my daughter leaves the house.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter will be 30 soon. And every time she drives away from my house, I say a prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not worried about her. I'm worried about everybody else around her. But that's my new normal.
Right.
That's my new life. I'm nervous.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're out here.
Because you know what can happen.
I know what can happen. And you don't know who's around you when you're driving. So Noah's Law, Rich, I'm with you.
Mm-hmm.
I told him, I said, I'm with you. I will be here. I will do whatever I need to do. This is a great bill, and I'm ready to fight for it.
And I just have to say, the advocates just showed up, not only for the original Noah's Law, mm-hmm. but, you know, the enhancement that was just recently enacted.
Yes.
And you guys were there.
Yes.
Sharing your stories, mm-hmm. telling the importance of what was going on. And it truly made a difference. It truly made a difference. And I am impressed all the time with the ability to really get to the heart of it all, which is we're trying to save lives here.
It's
and
so
there's
simple.
An impact. It's so simple.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if you can talk, because you've really eloquently talked about your journey to mm-hmm. your new normal.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. And there are maybe other family members out there who are impacted. I think MED provides a wonderful support. I remember last year we were doing Maryland Remembers, which is a wonderful event where families come together. We hope no new families have to be added, but unfortunately every year they are. And I had somebody come up and said they had been, and a family member had been taken from them, and they needed some support, and linking them up to MAD and making sure they had that network, because the pain that you're going through is hard enough alone.
Yes.
But to have that support and know that you've got others who will help carry you through.
I pay it forward, because I had Jan and Nancy that wrapped their arms around me and helped me through this process. And help me understand what MAD does and how MAD helps people.
Mm-hmm.
And they helped me so well that I was like, I'm doing this.
Mm-hmm.
I love it and also loathe it when Bryna calls me and says, hey, I have a family I need you to talk to. Being a peer counselor for them is what I deem myself. It's therapeutic. And I also want the families to know that they have a support system.
Mm-hmm.
And MAD is here. It's a beautiful thing to be part of, and it's a horrible thing to be a part of. You know, it's like a curse and a blessing.
Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to be a part of it, but
we're one big happy family that we don't want to be in.
Mm-hmm.
But being able to help people understand their feelings, because that's what it is. For me, it's just someone helped me understand my feelings and helped me put them in perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like to pay that forward.
So you're just talking about MAD, and the mission is so clear, you know, zero deaths, zero injuries from impaired driving, really bringing that to an end. Mm-hmm. And it is so aligned with what we do at MDOT and our Vision Zero in Maryland that the legislature has adopted and certainly the governor has endorsed. How do you keep motivated for that vision? I imagine it's frustrating at times. You talked about some of the environments where you're challenged. And
yes.
Legislatively, I know it can be tough at times. How do you keep that motivation?
Everything that I'm doing is because I'm honoring my son. So Darius is my motivator. He is the reason that I do this. He has given me a purpose, and I feel like this is my purpose. Right. So I want to make him proud. That's that.
Well, no doubt he is.
Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. I hope he is, because that's what I want. I want to make Darius proud. And the second part of that question, because it's really just two parts. Mm-hmm. Darius first, but I know we can save lives. Mm. And I want to save lives. I don't want this to be my life, but I don't know how to make it not my life. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to walk away from this, because I know what I'm doing is going to save lives. And it's really just that simple. Dealing with the politicians, the politics of it all, it can be frustrating, but it drives me, if that makes sense, because it's like, okay, what do we do? Because we have to keep pushing and pushing. How much more? What do you need from me? Mm-hmm. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to push this, push this, push this. Where do you need me? Who do I need to sit in front of? Mm-hmm. What do I need? I am that person, because I know we're going to save lives. And that's really it. Mm-hmm. My motivation is Darius Stevon Brown, and we're going to save lives. I don't want any other mother, father, sibling, grandparents, cousins, best friends, anyone to ever have to feel what we feel. My husband, my daughter, Ryan, his best friend, and I on a daily basis. Because it's not like some people will say, oh, in time. That doesn't work with us. That's not what it is. Time makes it worse, because I've celebrated more of my son's birthdays without him than with him.
It's hard to think about.
And I was in a therapy session, and that reality hit me during that session. And it took me back a lot of steps because I've celebrated more birthdays without Darius than with him. Hard thing.
Hard to accept, definitely. Mm-hmm. As we think about it, what can make the most difference to bring about that change? Is it telling the stories? Is it making sure people are clear on the consequences of driving impaired? You know, what is that? I know there's not one answer. There's never one answer for complex problems. But what do you think is the most important piece to really change that behavior? Because that's what it's about at the end of the day.
There are so many different things that can make the difference. But the most impactful thing is sharing our stories. Because we make it human. Like, we give it life. We give it a face. We give our loved ones a voice. Because they don't have a voice, so we're their voice. We're speaking for them. So making it, that's the human side of it. The humanity of it all is our loved ones. My son was a human being. So sharing his story, I think, is very, very impactful. But the second most impactful thing is making sure we have very strong laws in place, but people understand the laws. Mm-hmm. So it goes back to the, how do we get society to understand what we're trying to do, and we're not trying to inconvenience them? Because you know, I hear that word a lot, inconvenient. And for me, it's, well, what about the inconvenience of me not having my son anymore? Mm-hmm. You're talking about doing not wanting to have a law in place because it makes people feel it inconvenienced them. Mm-hmm. Having strong laws in place and having people understand the consequences and really, really having them understand the consequences, having kids understand the consequences, having these parents understand the consequences of the actions of their children, because they're your children. Those three things, I think, are such a winning combination. And I think as long as MAD and everyone, MDOT as well, having them all involved and everybody trying to reach the common goal. We all have different ways of doing it. Right. But at the end, we're all trying to reach the same goal. Mm-hmm. So that common goal, and as long as we're all there, we're out here fighting that good fight because we're fighting to save lives. And I think that's the most impactful things that we can do. Sharing Darius' story is the first start.
Well, I love that, and I think it's a beautiful place to wrap up for today. Vicki, I just want to thank you again for taking the time to share your story, inspirational as it always is. And it happened to your whole family. You're all survivors, right?
We are all survivors.
And I think that what I share oftentimes is, you know, being the governor's highway safety rep, I have the honor of meeting families like yours who've had unspeakable tragedies happen, but I feel like I know the family member who's not here. I feel like I know Darius and many others who I've met throughout the years. Yes. And so we take his memory with us and all the fun things that he did as a young child so that we can remember when we get in the car and not to get in the car when we're impaired ever.
This is 12-year-old Darius. That smile was always that smile.
That's awesome.
He had the most beautiful, bright smile. He loved life. He loved people. And to not be able, the hardest thing is to only have pictures. Mm-hmm. I can only see him here. Mm-hmm. That's my new normal. So what MDOT is doing is such a beautiful thing. So, I thank you personally, Victoria Brown, and Vicki Brown, as most people know me, my husband, Robert, my daughter, Aaliyah, and his best friend, Ryan. We thank you. Mm-hmm. And Kathy, Ryan's mom, we thank you for what you're doing. I greatly appreciate it. And on behalf of MAD, we are so very honored that you have allowed us to share our story, to share my story, and to share MAD with these good people.
Thank you so much. It's truly my honor, and I hope that our listeners will think about Darius, will think about you and your whole family and what you've been through, and that they never get impaired behind the wheel. We can save lives. We can make a difference. We can get down to zero families who are entering the MAD family, who are coming to our Maryland Remembers event every year. Together, we truly can make a difference. I want to thank you for listening today. I encourage you to think about the stories that we've shared, to really take that to heart, and always be safe when you're behind the wheel. We need to look out for each other, and together we can reach that Vision Zero goal. Thanks for joining me. Look forward to talking to you again soon. Take care.